You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in, everyone, to Locked On Rockets, your home for podcast coverage of the Houston Rockets. I'm your host, Ben DuBose. Today's show is brought to you courtesy of our friends and partners over at SeatGeek. Go to SeatGeek.com or download that SeatGeek mobile app and enter the promo code LORockets, and you can get a $20 rebate today off of your first purchase from SeatGeek. So as we chat on this Friday, the rumor mill continues to churn, specifically with Chris Paul. We're now just 15 days away from free agency. It's Friday the 16th, so July 1st will be a Saturday, 2 weeks from tomorrow. Still a lot of time for things to change, but as far as Chris Paul, the top free agent, realistically on the market, because let's be real, neither of Steph Curry or Kevin Durant is even 0.001% open to leaving. So Chris Paul, top free agent on the market, and it seems, second report this week, that he is open to leaving the Los Angeles Clippers, and the best part of it, all the Rockets are one of the teams that seems poised to at least get a meeting with him. According to a report in the LA Times, Paul appears set to meet with the Rockets, the Nuggets, and the Spurs. Of course, he'll still give the Clippers heavy consideration, but that's the second real piece of news this week. It started with Adrian Wojnarowski, the god of basketball reporting, in a podcast right after the finals, saying that essentially the Clippers did not know where they stood with him. And Woj actually made the argument that if, with all the uncertainty that the Clippers have, Blake Griffin as a free agent, J.J. Redick as a free agent, and obviously even if they were to return the entire cast to continue to bolster depth and get better, that they either need Chris Paul to be in or out by July 1st. And Woj's argument was that they'd have a commitment from him by then, they may need to move forward. Well, if Chris Paul is planning on meeting with the Spurs, the Rockets, and the Nuggets, it seems pretty clear that he is not sold on the Clippers. And that, to me, is the biggest hurdle that teams, including the Rockets, have to cross. If I had to put my money down, I would still bet on the Clippers because there's so much history there. Chris Paul does want to win, but from what we know about Chris Paul, he's a big-time competitor, but his view of winning basketball, it's more about a culture. It's more about a vision. And so in Los Angeles, he's got a coach that he almost single-handedly brought in Doc Rivers. He's got ownership that's on the same page now. He's got guys that he's been to war with before. You know, he was instrumental in keeping DeAndre Jordan a couple of years ago. So there's a high degree of comfort there. We know that LA is the virtual capital of the league. As far as the NBA is concerned, he's comfortable with his home there, his off-court life, et cetera, et cetera. And so for Chris Paul to leave there, it would have to be a clearly better basketball situation, which at 32 years old, that's the one thing that has me keeping an open mind. This isn't a guy who's 27 or 28 and can say, well, you know, I'll stay in my comfort zone, and if I really want to win a ring, then I can deal with this on the back half of my career. No, Chris Paul at 32, he's in the last 3 or 4 years of his prime at most. So if he wants to seriously make a run in the prime of his career, he's got to do it now. That's what keeps me open-minded to him potentially leaving, but there are a lot of reasons for him to stay. He's always stayed before when there's been a little bit of uncertainty. So for me, the biggest stumbling block is seeing him leave LA in the first place. But as Woj laid out the other day, the big thing for the Clippers, with so much out on the table for them, they need certainty from their stars first. Before they can pursue anything else, they need to know what he's going to do. And the other side of it, Chris Paul knows that if he's going to stay with the Clippers, the earlier he gives them word, the better, so that they can give themselves the best chance to build a contender around him. So knowing all of that, if Chris Paul is not willing to give assurances to the Clippers by July 1st, and there's still 15 more days to go, but as we sit in mid-June, it sure looks like he's poised to give meetings, that gives me hope that, yes, this could actually happen. And so that's where I want to start with this, is looking at the rumors. Again, these are two big-time sources, the LA Times, the beat writer there, and then, of course, Adrian Wojnarowski. These aren't just random reports from bloggers. These are top-of-the-line, plugged-in people, both of them linking not just Chris Paul to leaving Los Angeles, but potentially meeting with the Houston Rockets. So this isn't just, you know, some little whisper that we don't know whether to give it credence. This is real. And so that's what I want to start off this show talking about. Now, the back half of the show, I am going to get to that in a few minutes. I've got a special guest coming on, going to break down the basketball fit, hypothetically, if Chris Paul were to choose the Rockets, because I've been a little stunned that the reaction on Twitter, I would say it's been mostly positive, but there's a fair amount of skepticism, not just over the chances the Rockets have, but how well it would work out if he were there. Personally, I think that's a little ridiculous. You're looking at a guy, maybe the second best point guard of all time, a truly elite NBA player. You worry about the fit later in that instance, especially in today's NBA. I've been a little concerned by the blowback from a few of y'all on Twitter, but hopefully to kind of mitigate those fears a little bit, I've got a special guest that's kind of break down the X's and O's of how he might fit in Houston in just a few moments. But for now, before we get to that, I do want to focus on the rumors first and foremost, because that's what's new. We could speculate all day about Chris Paul and the Rockets, but at the end of the day, it's speculation. What we're trying to do here is focus on, okay, what do we know? And what we know is that Chris Paul does appear open to leaving. That's the biggest step. As I said, to me, it's not the Spurs, it's the Clippers for a variety of reasons that scare me the most in terms of if I had to bet my money, I would still bet on the Clippers as far as the team he suits up for in October 2017. But given the Clippers need to hear early to get word before July 1st to go on with the rest of their offseason, and well, depending on what Chris Paul does, it may not even make sense for them to re-sign a guy like J.J. Redick, for example. So there's a lot of offshoots to this, and so if Chris, knowing all that, still decides to do the tour, that's a good sign. But, of course, even if he were open to leaving the Clippers, and let's run with that hypothetical for a minute, the Rockets are not the only team on this list. There are, of course, other teams that could come up, but the first three, the Rockets, the Spurs, and the Nuggets. Obviously, when you look at the other two teams, the Spurs seem to be a bigger threat. The Nuggets, there's a nice young core, but Chris Paul at 32 years old seems pretty far-fetched that team, even with Chris Paul, would it be a playoff team? Absolutely, but could they contend with the likes of the Warriors, even the Spurs, in the next couple of years? I really, really don't see that. I think the real reason that you might add Denver, well, some of it, these pursuits can be a little quirky. Think back to 2 years ago with LaMarcus Aldridge. Before he signed with the Spurs, it sounded like he almost signed with Phoenix, which seems really random, but who knows? You get these teams, they're able to offer Phoenix to Aldridge back then, maybe Denver to Chris Paul now, the ability to truly be the centerpiece. There's a lot of appeal to that, to build the team in their image. It's a little bit more of a blank slate. There's some appeal to that, but ultimately, just as it did with Aldridge, I don't think that's going to win the day. It might be worth the meeting, but I would be very surprised if Chris Paul, 32 years old, actually went for that as his choice. I think the bigger factor that may be at play there is having a team that's not the Clippers that is willing and able to offer max money. Because if the Nuggets don't keep Gallinari, there's an obvious path to max money. The Spurs and Rockets both have to do a lot of work to get there. And that, to me, is why you keep the Nuggets on the table. Because what happens if the Clippers just say, hey, we've got to move on? There's so much in flux with the Clippers if they don't have a good vibe. And it's pretty clear from that Woj piece that there's not a lot of confidence from the Clippers right now for whatever reason. What happens if the Clippers say, hey, we've got to move on? Because they're juggling so many balls with Griffin, J.J. Redick. Now they brought in Jerry West as a new consultant to their front office, so you know they're going to be aggressive. What happens if the Clippers just say, hey, we've got to move on? No, Chris Paul needs leverage, and the Spurs and Rockets can't really give it to him because neither has Derek Capro to get close to a max salary. Because if there's nowhere other than Spurs or Rockets, then it's pretty easy to say, hey, well, why don't you take this pay cut? And while he wants to be on a winner, at the same time, he also wants to get as close to a max deal as he can. Also worth noting that, you know, as president of the Players Association, I think of all people, Chris Paul is aware of the precedent that he would be setting if he were to sign a significantly below max deal. And so that's one more reason that I don't expect that to happen. I think it's just smart to have teams that have an easy and obvious path to cap room. That's what the Nuggets do. And if the Clippers have to move on from him, well, keeping the Nuggets in the picture makes it all the easier to make it clear to the Spurs, Rockets, and the other team that get into negotiations with him, saying, hey, if you don't clear the money, there is somewhere else I can go and get that money. But, as I said, the Nuggets, I think that's mainly their play here. There's a little bit of intrigue, but for Chris Paul, if he wants to win, there are not many places he can go that even give him the opportunity to think about competing in a landscape that includes the current Warriors. Now, when it gets down to the Spurs and Rockets, look, I've taken a lot of heat for this on Twitter. I also did on Clutch Fans yesterday. I posted about this. But folks, in my eyes, the gap between the Spurs and the Rockets is not as big as a lot of people are making it out to be. Yes, the Spurs are better. They earned the 2 seed. They earned a 4-2 win in the second round series. Good for them. But just because they're better does not mean that the discussion is over. This is not a zero-sum game. The Spurs were better than the Rockets. The Rockets were better than the LA Lakers. The gaps in those, however, were very, very different. There are degrees. There is nuance to this. You don't just look at this and say, well, Team A is better than Team B, so let's shut down discussion. It's over. No, it's pretty close when you look at it. And I think if you're not a Rockets fan, if you step back and you take the anger away, because I know there's still a lot of hurt, a lot of frustration, especially with how the series ended in Game 6. There's a lot of people that kind of took that personally, and I understand it. But if you take a step back, especially if you're looking from a neutral perspective around the league, the Spurs won 61 games. They were consistently the 2 seed. Rockets won 55 games. They were consistently the 3. Those teams never changed all season long. All 4 regular season matchups went right down to the wire. The playoff series went 6 games, and, well, I mean, most of us, I think, agree that it was basically decided in overtime in Game 5. That was the game, tied at 2, and it went to overtime in San Antonio. These teams, San Antonio, earned their win. They were better. But the gap, it's not huge. And the reason I bring that up is because with the gap not being that huge, then you have to look at how the teams would clear enough salary to get close to $30 million or more to offer a contract that Chris Paul and his representation would be willing to accept. The Spurs, to get there, you absolutely would be having to move on. Patty Mills you'd have to let walk. Jonathan Simmons, maybe, although there's a Gilbert Arenas rule, there might be an opportunity they could keep him, although a team could backload the offer. But Mills, for sure. Simmons, very possibly. Danny Green, absolutely. Pau Gasol, absolutely. These are pieces that are non-negotiable. Dwayne Dedmon, David Lee, I know those are small pieces, but they were big to the depth. Those are a lot of players that you are taking away from that team. And then you add on, in addition to that, Tony Parker's under contract, but with the injury he suffered against the Rockets, he's not going to be ready until at least the All-Star break, and who knows what his effectiveness will be then. Manu Ginobili, he might retire. You are looking at dramatically reducing, shortening, whatever you want to call it, that Spurs rotation to get anywhere near the cap room to sign Chris Paul. Yes, you could have Chris Paul, Kawhi Leonard, and probably LaMarcus Aldridge, because I'm guessing the Spurs could probably move Danny Green and Pau Gasol, letting them keep LaMarcus. But what makes the Spurs special is the depth. We saw it. They were even somewhat competitive against the Warriors without Kawhi, and of course we know what they did in Game 6 in Toyota Center in Houston. Folks, the depth is a big part of what makes them special, and they would have to take a huge hit to their core to get anywhere near the money needed for Chris Paul. Whereas the Rockets, if they can move Ryan Anderson, and I've had guests on this very show, Brian Geltzahler, that think that it is very possible to do so. If the Rockets can move Ryan Anderson, they can have their entire core from last year minus Ryan Anderson and have the room to be in consideration for Chris Paul. So yeah, the Spurs were marginally better last year. 61 wins versus 55, 4 games, 2 in a 6-game playoff series. Okay, they're better. That's fine, but it's close enough to where we can at least have a conversation. And so then you balance that against the fact that the Spurs, to get in the game, you'd be losing Patty Mills, possibly Jonathan Simmons, certainly Danny Green, Pau Gasol, perhaps more than that, uncertainty with the older core members too, like Tony Parker and Manu Ginobili. You contrast that with the Rockets, who can essentially run back the same team minus Ryan Anderson. You can make an argument that the Rockets are better positioned for the future than the Spurs are. Now, it's not going to be easy. The Spurs would still have a selling point. They'd say, hey, we've got Kawhi, we've got Greg Popovich, we've got all this culture. LaMarcus can be a better third wheel than whoever the hypothetical third in Houston would be at this time. I'm not saying it's easy for the Rockets. All I'm saying is that it is a conversation, and the Rockets can very well get themselves in the game. And that's another point I want to hit on. I've seen a lot of folks that I feel like, for lack of a better word, are scared. They hate being told no. Folks, you can't win if you don't play. To win at the highest level in the NBA, especially now against teams that have Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, Draymond Green, Klay Thompson, you can't win without being in the market for the big boys. Yeah, the Rockets, they could go after Chris Paul and potentially miss out on a couple of other fits that might otherwise consider them on July 1st, July 2nd, etc. Okay, well, the Rockets and the rest of the NBA, there's such a gap between them and the Warriors, those fits are not going to put them over the top anyway. I hear a lot of people saying, well, they hated that they were drug along by Carmelo Anthony and LaMarcus Aldridge, and to a lesser extent, Chris Bosh, although I think most people understand in 2014 there were definitely some extenuating circumstances with the Chris Bosh thing. Look, folks, the guys you could have gotten then were not going to get you a ring anyway. Maybe, what, if you prioritize Chandler Parsons earlier, you can keep him in 2014 rather than going all in for the likes of Carmelo, Bosch, etc.? Okay, well, Chandler Parsons is not going to win you a ring. Would you be a little bit better with him? Sure, but at the end of the day, it's not a big deal. If you want to compete for a ring, this is what you've got to do. And if the player says no, it's not like it's some huge indictment on your organization. For top shelf players, you have at least 5 teams usually getting meetings, that sort of thing. You have 10, 15 that are at least inquiring, sometimes many more than that. We're talking about an NBA superstar. They can only say yes to one team. And if they're not your player, you're almost certainly not offering the most money. So the odds are always against you. You can't take it personally when one of these guys tells you no. And it feels like a lot of Rockets fans do. That's the only way you can play the game in today's NBA. You've got to put yourself in position to get some of those guys. The odds are against you, but sometimes it does work out, just like it did for the Rockets in 2013 for Dwight Howard. You don't know if you don't play, and Chris Paul is one of the only players. Now, he alone is not going to make the Rockets a contender, but also worth noting, he alone would not make the Spurs a contender. That's why I think the Rockets have a little bit of an avenue here. But he's at least the kind of piece where you pair him with James Harden, and you can say, okay, we're getting close. You might be there now. You might not be there now, excuse me, but you might be a move or two away. That at least gets you in consideration, whereas the other guys in the market, yeah, you could go for a little bit better fit guys. You could go after, you know, I've heard a lot of folks mention J.J. Redick, someone like that. Does he make you a better team? Sure he does. Does he really move the needle in terms of closing the gap between you and the Warriors? No, not at all. So that's why you have to look at this. If you want to think big and you know that that's what Daryl Morey does, then you have to put yourself in position. And what we've heard, so far, so good. The Rockets are in the game. He's open to leading the Clippers. Now it's just about them, the Spurs, and to a lesser extent, the Nuggets. And the last point I'll make about the Rockets versus Spurs comparison, because I do want to get to the basketball, I do want to get to our guest in just a minute. But again, what I said just a moment ago, keep in mind, Chris Paul joining either Kawhi or James Harden, that alone is not going to make either team a contender. It's about continuing to build the organization, the GM, the owner, attracting more talent to that city, your ability to recruit either Chris and James, Chris and Kawhi, of course, R.C. Buford or Daryl Morey. It's about an entire organizational fit and who you can recruit from. And I'm not seeing much evidence that the Spurs are any better than that than the Rockets. The Rockets have a great reputation around the league for treating their stars right. They got Dwight Howard in 2013. Now, the Spurs did get LaMarcus Aldridge in 2015. But other than that, the Spurs, they have not exactly been a dynamic team in free agency. And the other question I have, Chris Paul and James Harden, there's a lot of history between those two. They go back a long ways, a lot of Team USA going overseas. There's a relationship there. And it's not just James' relationship with Chris. James has very close relationships with a lot of stars around the league. I don't know that Kawhi Leonard does. Part of the thing about Kawhi Leonard, now yes, he's a phenomenal basketball player, but off the court, he's a little Tim Duncan-ish, which that's not meant to degrade him. He's a hell of a player, Tim Duncan, one of the top 10 of all time, and Kawhi right now is clearly a top 5 player in the league. But when it comes to teaming up in today's NBA, we know what happened with the Warriors and Kevin Durant. We know about Draymond Green texting and calling Kevin Durant from the locker room after Game 7 in 2016. We know about the pre-existing relationship between LeBron, Dwayne Wade, and Chris Bosh before they teamed up in 2010. From what I've heard, Kawhi Leonard is not to that level when it comes to socializing with his peers around the league the way James is. I'm not saying it's an indictment against Kawhi Leonard, the basketball player, because it's not. He's phenomenal. But recruitment is about more than basketball. James Harden has had success before. He plays the game. He knows what needs to be done to communicate with these upper echelon talents. Can Kawhi do that? Well, his play can certainly say a lot, but for someone like Chris Paul in particular, who, as I said earlier, is very much into one linear vision, culture throughout the organization, being in line with the other star, the supporting cast, the coach, the GM, the owner. There's a little bit of uncertainty with Kawhi Leonard, and so it's superficial, but I do question, is Chris Paul willing to make Kawhi, you know, his permanent anchor as opposed to someone that he trusts a little bit more to go to war with? Kawhi's a hell of a basketball player, but I do think it's a fair question. And as with the other Rockets first comparisons, not saying the Rockets are definitely better. All I'm doing is telling you guys there is a case. It is not open and shut that the Spurs give Chris Paul a better chance to win. There is a case the Rockets and Daryl Morey can make once free agency opens on July 1st, and that's really all you can reasonably hope for. Now, that's the rumor mill. Going to get to basketball in just a second, but for now, I do want to pause and acknowledge our friends and partners over at SeatGeek, because without them, we would not be able to bring this show to you as frequently as we do. Folks, SeatGeek, well, this time of year, pretty much throughout the year, but especially now in the heat of baseball season, it's a huge asset for me because they do a great service. When you buy from SeatGeek, you are often buying from the secondary market. Folks, the Astros, best record in baseball still. They've got the Boston Red Sox in town this weekend. If you guys have looked at the ticket prices, it's crazy. Freaking mezzanine seats way in the outfield, the upper deck, are going for $58 a game, face value. That's what dynamic pricing does. And all sports do it to some extent, but baseball is especially notorious for it. But if you are able to buy on the secondary market, many times directly from season ticket holders, you can buy directly from people who get those same tickets for a face value of in the $20 range for the season as a whole. So, of course, they're willing to sell at a lower rate. So that's why I'm a huge proponent of the secondary market, and among those sources, SeatGeek to me is by far the best. They grade every ticket from 1 to 100. They know, so that way you know you're getting the best bang for your buck. They do all the cross comparisons with multiple websites, so you know that there's not going to be a better deal elsewhere, and they do guarantee every ticket you buy. Best of all, as my listeners here at Lockdown Rockets, you guys all get a $20 rebate off of your first purchase from SeatGeek, and it's so easy. To get it, here's what you do. Download the SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab and click add a promo code, then enter the promo code LO Rockets. From there, SeatGeek will send you $20 in the mail after you've made your first ticket purchase. So remember, download that SeatGeek app and enter the promo code LO Rockets today. So with that said, let's jump back into the show. Spent the first 20 minutes of this podcast breaking down the rumor mill and why I think the Rockets do have an avenue here to pursue with Chris Paul. Now I want to turn to the basketball fit and address some of the concerns I've seen about the potential fit of Chris Paul in Houston. And so to kind of help me break down the X's and O's, I'm going to be joined by my good friend Paul. You know him better on Twitter as @RocketIntellect. But Paul is a guy that I really respect a lot from a tactical standpoint. His knowledge of the X's and O's of the game is pretty strong. And if you follow him on Twitter, you know he's been a big proponent for days of this Chris Paul to the Rockets rumor that seems to be building up steam. So without further ado, let's get Paul on the show right here on Locked On Rockets and break down a little bit more about Chris Paul and how he might fit in here in Houston. Paul, how's it going today, man?
I'm doing pretty well. How about you?
Pretty well. I think that's a fair assessment. Whenever you're in the conversation, your basketball team for pretty obvious top 10 talent, I think that's always a pretty good day. But I've enjoyed reading your Twitter, especially this week, because I feel like we kind of, you know, have this shared understanding of, you know, essentially this being like the Twilight Zone in terms of so many Rockets fans inexplicably having skepticism over the prospect of adding Chris Paul. And of course, you know, I'm a big fan of you from an X's and O's standpoint. I really respect your X's and O's takes on the game. So without delaying any longer, just straight up, whenever you hear someone tell you, you know, I'm concerned if there are enough basketballs to go around for Chris Paul and James Harden, how do you respond to that?
Well, it's a concern. It's not the kind of concern that, like, prevents you from going after Chris Paul or prevents you from signing him. It's the thing that you worry about once he's signed.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Paul and James Harden obviously both like to have the ball, but they're both very good shooters, both have very good off-the-catch numbers shooting. Both are, like, elite-level basketball IQ guys, and I think that they would be able to figure it out probably if they got put on the same court together. It's not like the perfect fit, not hand in glove, because, like, I'm sure everybody knows they both like to have the ball, but they'd figure it out probably. And the floor for Chris Paul and James Harden playing together is pretty high. I mean, can you imagine having, like, two top 10 basketball players on the same team that can both, like, shoot very well and both are, like, all-world passers? Can you imagine having two guys like that on the same team and not winning, like, 50 games? I couldn't. So even if it doesn't work out, like, my idea of that pairing not working out is 50 wins, similar to what the Clippers are, and that sounds pretty good to me, if that is indeed the floor.
My assessment of this, you know, it's a different age in the NBA now than it's ever been, and you know, you look at obviously the Heat super team from a few years ago with LeBron and Dwayne Wade, you could make the argument that, well, both of those guys need to have the ball. Yet somehow it worked out. And you could say the same thing about the current Warriors with Steph Curry and Kevin Durant. Both of them need the ball. Now, I know, you know, in those cases, you don't have two players that are technically labeled as point guard, but I don't think that anyone would say that either of those fits was seamless. But it's just, you know, you're kind of at a point in the modern NBA where if you're a star player, you almost have to be willing to sacrifice to share. And my take on it is that, you know, is it without risk? No. But if you want to win at a high level, if you're a competitor, both Chris Paul and James Harden are very much competitors, you have to be willing to adapt and to sacrifice some. That's what the Heat and the current Warriors have shown us. And so, I don't know, Paul, I mean, my take, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, but we're living in an NBA where this seems to be becoming the norm. You know, it's not that it's perfect, but at some point you do have to sacrifice a little bit, and that's just what you have to do if you want to build even the hope of a contender against a team like Golden State.
Yeah, absolutely. In this environment where players are linking up together, you gotta have obviously as good of a team as possible, and if you're going to have as good of a team as possible, you're going to have to make sacrifices. And I think James had a great season last year. I don't think, like, he had a great season last year. I think it's probably time that he makes a sacrifice. I'm not saying that he's been a selfish player, obviously, but I think we're at the point of his career where he should probably, like, be less worried about how great of a season, individual season he has, and be more worried about winning a championship and all that good stuff. And if he can't play, like, off the ball occasionally, then I think that is pretty damning. I think that's not a great thing to... No. That speaks volumes about Harden's character. If he can't... I think he can, but you'd have to see if Chris Paul got there. And that's a long shot anyway, because I think Kawhi and the Spurs is probably a better fit if Chris Paul decided to get there. But on the off chance that Chris Paul is more intrigued by the idea of coming to the Rockets, then you got to be all for it. And just one more thing about this whole thing. I don't like this language that we use where we say, like, James Harden would have to play off the ball. Mm-hmm. I don't think either of them would necessarily play off the ball. Necessarily. I think it would be a mixed bag. Kyrie Irving and LeBron James play together and obviously have won a championship. I don't really consider either of them to be off the ball players or like be players that have played off the ball together. I think they've just like split the ball handling duties, and I think that's what would happen if Harden and Chris Paul got together. So I think people need to put that into perspective.
Yeah, I would agree with that. You're not looking at so much playing off the ball. Maybe a better way of phrasing it is you might reduce James's usage a little bit. And that's something I wanted to ask you about. I know, you know, you followed James for a long time, the trajectory of his career. And my take, you know, we're not at a point where James is on the downhill side of his career, certainly, but it's pretty clear. If you look at his 5 years in Houston, the athleticism has fallen off some. We can't deny that. Of course, that's to be expected. But James has carried a pretty phenomenal workload over his entire NBA career, which is now almost 10 years old, and of course, 5 in Houston. And to me, I actually would feel a lot better if you bring in someone like a Chris Paul to reduce that usage a little bit. I agree, off ball isn't the ideal way to kind of characterize it, but if you bring in Chris Paul to take some of the playmaking duties, that could be a big thing towards enabling James to stay at a high level for a longer period of time, because one of the things I worry about, James, on the course that he's on, the workload that he's taken on his 5 years in Houston, at some point, I don't know if that's 31, 32, 33, whatever the magic age is, but if he keeps the workload that he's on, I don't know that he's on course to be a great player in his mid to late 30s. I don't know what his aging curve would look like. Whereas if you bring in another playmaker like a Chris Paul, over the long haul of James Harden's career, hopefully all in Houston, to me, a Chris Paul could do a lot for extending the longevity of James Harden. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, and it's nothing else in terms of, like, even if he doesn't, like, decrease his usage, which he probably would have to anyway,
mm-hmm.
if he doesn't, you could just, like, be less concerned about playing him all those minutes. And Harden obviously reduced his minutes last year as a, like, star because the bench was really pretty great with Harden mm-hmm. off the floor, but it would be even better because you could stagger Chris Paul and Harden and have an elite playmaker on the floor at all times. So, you know, it would definitely help Harden's aging process and probably just allow Harden to have more energy going into the playoffs. So in terms of just, like, easing the load off Harden, I think it would help short-term and long-term.
How do you respond to the I know we've touched on the issue of two point guards already in regards to ball dominance, that sort of thing, but when you hear someone speculate over you're going to give $60 million to two point guards, my response would be great players are great players. It reminds me a lot of the other extreme of all the hand-wringing we heard last August and September when the Rockets, you know, officially announced, I'm using air quotes when I say that, that Harden would be the point guard. And of course, those of us in Houston, we understood who he was, and it was a little bit of a change, but it was nothing particularly drastic. But, it, you know, it just seems to me like one of those artificial constructs that a lot of fans have in their mind of, oh, this guy's a point guard, this guy's a shooting guard, this is the fit. Whereas, in my eyes, you're talking about guys like James Harden and Chris Paul. They're not great players because they're point guards or because they're in a certain box. They're just great players, period. So when you're at that level, when we're talking about players like that, my view, and I would be curious your take on it as well, is that it's almost the other extreme of the conversation we had last August, last September, about the Harden at point guard thing. The bottom line, at least in my eyes, is that when you're a great player to that level, the positions don't even matter as much. Where do you stand on that?
You know, whatever they'll be spending on those two guys combined, they won't be spending it on two great point guards. They'll be spending it on two MVP-type caliber guys.
Yep.
So I'm not really concerned about how much money they're throwing at two guys that play similar roles because I think that they are talented enough to be worth that cat figure. In terms of what was the other question?
Well, just about the concept of positions, and to me, you know, you already kind of touched on it in your response, but are you worried about the artificial construct of these are two point guards, or is it just a matter of hey, these are two top 10 caliber players? Figure out the rest later.
Yeah, they'll figure out, it's the type of thing where you sign them and figure the rest out later. They're both incredibly great players, and, you know, they're both maximized, I think. Their total impact is maximized when they both have the ball, like, all the time. I think that having Harden get the keys to the car and just driving it wherever he wanted to last year was a really great idea because he didn't have another star that he had to worry about. But in the case of Chris Paul, he's probably going to have to worry about that and compromise a little bit. But compromise is necessary when you're, like, playing with someone of that caliber. And it's worth it because your team's ceiling is so much higher. So positions I'm not really worried about. Figure it out.
Yeah, another variation of that same theme. I saw some folks on Twitter. I think one of them actually, my buddy Bryson, kind of debating with you the notion of Paul's mid-range game, which certainly Chris is very good at that. And of course, the Rockets as a team, they're a famous aversion to that this past season. And my response to that would be, when you're talking about a player like Chris Paul, you build the system around his strengths. You don't fit Chris Paul into the system per se. When you're talking about the opportunity to get, you know, a top 10 player, as you said, maybe the second best point guard in the history of the NBA, that's the kind of thing where it's less about the system. It's more about you just getting that kind of top shelf talent. And then if you need to adapt the system a little bit more to his mid-range style, then you do that. But to me, you know, when you talk about a certain class of players, and I don't know where that cutoff is, but certainly Chris Paul, in my eyes, is over it, then it's not about the system. Your system is Chris Paul and James Harden.
Yes. This idea that the Rockets are just going to, like, change a bunch of great players' style of play and have them stop shooting mid-range jumpers if they're efficient at it is kind of ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
They recruited LaMarcus Aldridge a couple years back and wanted him and didn't ask him to shoot threes or anything like that. They were going to have him take mid-range jumpers. When Nene came to the Rockets, they gave him the rights to shoot the mid-range jumpers, even though he wasn't all that good at them by the end, and he stopped making them. Chris Paul is, like, one of the greatest mid-range jump shooters of all time, and if he wants to shoot him, they'll let him shoot him because it's a part of his pick-and-roll game, and he excels in it. He's obviously one of the greatest pick-and-roll players of all time, so they're not going to ask him to change that. You know, James Harden takes his occasional mid-range step-back jumper, and no one really says anything. They won't say anything about Chris Paul either, because Chris Paul is Chris Paul.
Are you surprised at the amount of Ty Lawson truthers? This is a little bit of a subject change, but it's something, you know, I've been very shocked to see the amount of people that have invoked the name of Ty looking at this from a basketball standpoint. I thought it was pretty obvious, especially, you know, seeing how much he struggled in Indiana after the Rockets bought him out in early 2016. In the last year with the Kings, you know, he didn't even score in double figures. I mean, I thought it was pretty obvious that the reason Ty Lawson failed in Houston is that for whatever reason, Ty Lawson was just not a good basketball player. It had very little to do with the fit. It's just Ty Lawson, for various reasons, he had a lot going on with his life at the time, but whatever reason, he just wasn't a good player. Are you shocked that as many people still seem to be hung up on that?
No, because people are, in general, are pretty bad at drawing parallels. Ty Lawson obviously is not as good as Chris Paul. Not only that, but Ty Lawson couldn't really shoot threes all that well. Chris Paul can. Also, another reason why Ty Lawson and James Harden didn't work is because both of them were terrible defenders at the time, and their defense was the biggest issue on that team. Chris Paul, obviously, is one of the greatest defensive point guards that we've ever seen. So it's entirely different. It isn't really, like, remotely the same thing, and I don't... I get why people are saying it, because I don't think that people, like, think things through a lot of the time, but I think it's completely ridiculous that people are bringing it up, because it's just completely invalid.
I would agree. Paul, last question for you, and of course this is all in our fantasy world hypothetical that Daryl Morey can convince Chris to come to Houston. We've been talking a lot about Chris's fit with James, how he fits in the overall construct of the Rockets offense, Mike D'Antoni ball, all this sort of stuff. We haven't talked about Rockets players, current Rockets players, besides James Harden. So I'm curious your assessment. If Paul were to come to Houston, what is the Rockets' death lineup, so to speak? One thing I saw you mention on Twitter yesterday that I really liked, you pushed back against the narrative that, well, if you got Chris Paul to Houston, that Pat Beverly would be a trade chip. To me, if you can fit, you know, Pat Beverly's bulldog game away from the ball, Obviously, we know what he can do defensively. You can see, even though they're guards, pretty clear roles for both Pat Beverly and Eric Gordon in my eyes, even alongside Chris Paul and James Harden in this hypothetical. So I'm just curious, if you're running Chris Paul and James Harden out there in the fourth quarter with the Rockets roster the way it is today, who are the guys that you think fit really well with them?
I think, I don't know if, Pat Beverly or Eric Gordon would be the better fit in, that depth lineup, so to speak. I think Trevor Ariza at the four would be the way to go, just because Ariza's been teammates with Chris Paul before in the New Orleans days, and I think that would be, just a good recruiting point. I think Capella would obviously be in that final lineup, and obviously Chris Paul, James Harden, and your choice would be between, in my eyes, Eric Gordon and Patrick Beverly. I think that they would have great success with either one because, on one hand, Eric Gordon is this ridiculously strong. He's short, but he's really got really long arms, and he's ridiculously strong. He actually had some really good moments on the ball against Kawhi Leonard in the series that we shall not mention. But Patrick Beverly is obviously a bulldog, like you said, and he's tough enough to where he can deal with those things. The good part about Chris Paul and James Harden is one is really, really, really tough, and the other one is one of the strongest guards of all time. So you can do a little bit more with them in terms of positions on defense than one would think just looking at their height. So I definitely think there are a lot of options to go with there, and it would be really good.
Yeah, it would be great just to have that debate. But yeah, I'm right there with you because certainly we saw James last year defending fours at various points. Obviously, Chris Paul, Eric Gordon, as you said, those are very strong guys. Of course, we all know about Patrick Beverly. So yeah, even though they're all four guards, none of them taller than 6'5", at the same time, it's not just about height, length, strength. There's a lot of other factors that go into it. And so yeah, even though they're four guards, you'd have a little bit more versatility than I think the people who just look at height and nothing else might think. Paul, thank you so much for the time. Before you go, toss out your Twitter handle, basically any plug you want to throw out about where people can find you, your work, if they're not already following you already.
I am at Rocket, and then Intellect, just Rocket, and then Intellect, and then I have nothing else to plug. I just tweet at this point.
There you go. Well, you're good at it, like I said. I've particularly enjoyed it the last couple of days because it's stunning to me that there's any negative blowback at all towards the idea of Chris Paul coming to Houston if somehow that is what he would end up deciding. But I think you've done a pretty good job making a case for that and hopefully calming some of the, I don't know if the fears are completely unfounded. As you said, it's not like the ideal fit on paper, but certainly it's something that you absolutely have to do if somehow, and of course this is all a hypothetical, that Daryl can successfully make the sale on Chris once Saturday, July 1st gets here. Anyway, Paul, thank you so much for the time, and I'll catch up with you soon, okay, man?
All right.
That's Paul, i.e. Rocket Intellect. Hope you guys enjoyed that. I've always been a big fan of him on Twitter from an X's and O's standpoint. I thought he made some pretty compelling points. Obviously, if you guys listen to me, you know my view just from a big picture macro standpoint of how you have to get as many A-list players as you can to even dream about competing with the current Warriors, and Chris Paul is certainly on that list. But even beyond that, there are ways that this can work. Certainly, the current Warriors and Heat are forcing star players to collaborate and sacrifice more than ever before, so there's obvious precedent for that. Both Chris and James are big-time competitors. They are extremely aware, but they can do a lot. Both are good shooters. They can get better looks that way. James has experience playing off the ball, certainly in Oklahoma City, alongside Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant, where he was very good. It's not unprecedented. James has done it in his history. I think for both of them, Chris at 32, James about to enter the second half of his NBA career, I think potentially relieving the burden on them from a playmaking standpoint can help both of them last a little bit longer into their careers than they might otherwise do alone. So is it a seamless fit? No, there are sacrifices that have to be made, but that's generally the case anytime superstars team up. That's why it's such a big deal when they do, because generally stars, they want the most money, they want the limelight, they want their team. That's the way it's generally been done throughout the history of the NBA, and so that's why it's such a big deal when you see teams like the Heat a few years ago and like the Warriors after Kevin Durant went there. That's why it's such a big deal, because it is so unprecedented. You don't have to, you know, you don't see it happen that often, and there are sacrifices that have to be made, and so that's why it's so interesting. But at the same time, we're in a new age in the NBA. That stuff is happening more and more, and if James and Chris want to potentially win a ring and actually compete with a team like the Warriors, there's a pretty good case to be made that they may need to make some sacrifices, do some things different, and boy, I can't think of any better scenarios than the two of them together. Now, one last item before I close out the show. I did mention the first half of the show talking about the rumor mill, basically making the case for why Chris should choose Houston from a basketball standpoint. Wanted to basically make that the first half of the show, second half about the X's and O's fit. However, I realized talking to Paul, there was one other thing that I wanted to mention in the rumor mill segment that I did not, but I do think could be relevant. And that's the off-court stuff. Yes, Chris Paul should be about basketball at 32 years old. He's probably going to be about the best fit. However, we'd be naive not to mention the other stuff. Certainly, money is going to matter. We mentioned the changes to the roster that both the Spurs and Rockets would have to do to get anywhere near max salary room for Chris. And certainly, we all know that Chris, as president of the Players Association, he was a big part of the negotiations of the new collective bargaining agreement that essentially moved the over 36 rule to over 38. And what that meant, at least at the time, it seemed like that was setting up for Chris to get that one extra max year with the Clippers that he can't get anywhere else. And well, it applies to him because Chris will be 36 on that back year. He couldn't under the old CBA, he can under the new. So certainly off-court stuff does matter. The Clippers, I still view that as by far the biggest threat to Chris coming to Houston, not the Spurs. So the off-court stuff, he does want to win, but that other stuff does matter. Players want money, and then beyond just the money, there's the culture, there's the shared vision, the linear vision, you might call it, throughout the organization. All those things matter. The culture, the Doc Rivers, the GM, I don't know what terms he's on with Jerry West, who seems to be coming in as a top-level consultant for the front office. All of that stuff matters, and, well, the good news, as I mentioned in Wednesday's show, Chris has gone down the road with the Rockets before. He did seem poised to sign here in June 2013 before the Clippers finalized the deal for Doc Rivers. So you do know that Chris has done his homework on the Rockets as an organization. But beyond all of that, beyond the fact that, yeah, the Rockets are going to need to create as much money as they can, and then, of course, there's going to be the debate of, even with all of that, would he give up the extra year of max money that he could get with the Clippers, considering that he might not be able to command that same money on the market when he's 36 years old, because who knows how his body is going to hold up over the next 4 years. One kind of ace in the hole card that the Rockets might have in their pocket is, relative to the other teams that they're in direct competition with in this sweepstakes, based on the rumors so far, the ace in the hole card, the trump card, whatever you want to call it, could be branding. We know that Chris cares about his off-court brand. We know the CP3 that he's got going. You know the State Farm commercials, et cetera, et cetera. Relative to San Antonio and Denver, Houston is a substantially bigger market, much bigger. Then you look at the ties to China. I know this is something that Tad Brown, if he gets in that room with Chris Paul, he's going to mention this over and over again. But the Rockets, yeah, they are China's team. That should only increase even more now. They're signing Zhou Qi, which seems to be an inevitability this summer. But yeah, the Rockets have a unique opportunity to expand his brand into China. Then you look at who he's going to be playing with. James Harden is by far more visible on the global stage than any player on San Antonio or Denver. And so relative to those teams, Houston has a substantially bigger global reach. It's also a bigger market, which means more direct advertising potential. Is that enough to bridge the gap between that and playing in LA and the extra the extra full max year that the Clippers can offer. I don't know that it's enough to totally bridge that, but I know it's definitely a leg up relative to San Antonio and Denver, and it might can at least mitigate a little bit of that gap between the Clippers and all the other teams, courtesy of that extra year that they're able to offer Chris Paul via the new collective bargaining agreement. So keep that in mind. Between the presence of James Harden, the Rockets' reach in China, the Rockets' status playing in a market in Houston that's about to become the third largest city in the U.S. and is substantially bigger from a media standpoint than either San Antonio or Denver, there are some definite positives to Chris's financial profile, his brand, all the things he wants to do away from the court. I don't think that's going to drive the bus. I think the basketball is going to be the biggest consideration. However, those other things, they can add up. They can make a small difference. And if the decision is really close between San Antonio and Houston, those are two things, or really more than two things, that the Rockets have in their back pocket that potentially could tip the scales to Houston a little bit. Now, of course, that's speculation. We don't exactly know what Chris Paul's priority list is going to be. But, well, it's June 16th. Everything we say is speculation at this point. So did want to throw that out there. I meant to do that in the first half of the show before we close out. Did want to mention that aside from basketball, there are some pretty compelling points that the Rockets can go into that meeting with Chris Paul and make, especially when it's in comparison to the likes of San Antonio and Denver as their eminent non-LA competition. And that's, of course, based on the reports we've seen at the LA Times and from Adrian Wojnarowski of The Vertical. So, with that said, I'll finally wrap up this episode of Locked on Rockets. As always, appreciate you guys for tuning in. I'm Ben DuBose, your host. You can follow me on Twitter at Ben DuBose. This is Locked on Rockets, your home for podcast coverage of the Houston Rockets. Follow us on Twitter at Locked on Rockets if you aren't already doing so. Also, email us, lockedonrockets@gmail.com. If you've got questions, suggestions, or inquiries about how to become a potential sponsor of this program, just as SeatGeek was today. Remember, download the SeatGeek mobile app or go to SeatGeek.com and use the promo code LORockets, and you can get a $20 rebate today off of your first purchase from SeatGeek. Beyond that, if you haven't checked out the entire Locked On Podcast Network, I strongly encourage you to do so. We've got a full roundup of teams across the NBA and NFL, along with national shows for both leagues. A lot of these are with you in season five times a week, off season at least two or three times a week. A lot of great content across the leagues. So if you haven't already done that, please check out the Locked On Podcast Network. You should be able to find my show and all the others on pretty much every outlet for media you could possibly search for. iTunes, Audio Boom, Stitcher, Google Play, TuneIn. Just search for Locked On Rockets or search for any other Locked On show. Search for Locked On Texans, hosted by my good buddy Robert Land. Texans are very close to breaking for training camp, just about a month away. So there's a lot going on over there. So if you haven't checked out that show, please do. But yeah, your support of not just me, but the network as a whole, that's how we're able to grow. So the more you can give me a chance, as well as anyone else on the network, I'm greatly appreciative of that, because that's a big part of how we're able to bring this to you more frequently than any other podcast out there when it comes to the Houston Rockets. So with that said, I hope everybody goes out and has a great weekend. I'll talk with you guys again early next week. That's draft week. Next Thursday is the draft. And then from there, we are just about a week out from free agency, a free agency that seems poised to be very active in Houston, as it always is. But Chris Paul, probably the top reasonably available free agent on the market. And he seems, at this point, very likely to give real consideration to the Rockets. So it's going to be a lot to look forward to in the next 2 weeks. Well, really the next 3 weeks, because we all know it's probably not going to end on July 1st. It's going to take a few days to go through the meetings, all the channels, all that kind of stuff. But yeah, going to be a lot to talk about the next 2 or 3 weeks if the Rockets look to take the next step and hopefully close the gap a little bit between themselves and the Golden State Warriors. Going to be a lot to break down. And of course, if you stick with me here at Locked On Rockets, we will do that for you. For now, go out and enjoy your weekend. And again, look forward to talking with you guys again very early next week.